over a year I've been overpitched in track and trace and nobody can actually solve that and make that work. And I showed within 3 minutes a real use case of track and trace where the national ministry is basically doing the digital signatures, including the customs, and he was completely blown away.
Welcome to the Encrypted Podcast, your gateway to the future of technology and innovation, right here in the heart of Dubai's dynamic tech universe. I'm your host, Maria Vovchok, and together with Dubai Blockchain Center, we are embarking on a journey that unravels the minds of tech visionaries through the digital frontiers that are shaping our world. Hello and welcome everyone to the Encrypted Podcast. I'm your host, Maria Vovchok, and today we are happy to welcome Frederick Gregard, the CEO of Cardano Foundation. Frederick's key priorities are to drive the Cardano Foundation's adoption strategy, lead integration and execution of its mission, and enable fast-track value creation for inclusive and equitable growth using Cardano. He brings vast experience of the professional services and financial industries to the foundation, where he's also building partnerships with institutions and enterprises around the globe. When he has free time, Frederick likes to ski. Is that correct, Frederick?
Yeah, we're going into the winter season and I absolutely love an old traditional way of skiing called telemark skiing.
Right now we are here in Dubai, but you're actually talking right now about Switzerland, right?
I am, but you can actually ski in Dubai.
Oh,
so it
yes.
is actually there,
there
so
is
that
a place.
There is
there
a
is
ski
one
hill,
place.
And I'm one of the few lucky people who can actually ski for free there because I'm one of the mountain search and rescue people who's authorized to go there.
Amazing.
So if I wear my red jacket, they welcome me and I can work a little bit there helping people skiing as well.
That's amazing. Frederick, what else our audience should definitely know about you that probably I haven't mentioned in the intro?
Probably that I'm extremely passionate about ensuring that everybody around the world has equal opportunities to contribute to the world's largest problems in terms of solving them. Mm-hmm. And I do think that decentralization is a feature and a trade-off, but I think we have so much more talent out there and we have so many more opportunities if we dare to open our eyes and really sort of invite more people into those closed circles.
So let's talk about problem solving when we're talking about Cardano Foundation. First of all, let's tell our audience what are the main layers of Cardano ecosystem and where Cardano Foundation fits within that.
Yeah, so there's a lot of different ways to cut that cake. But the way I always think about it is that you have a top layer, which is a value capture layer. I'm always trying to find a different word for it because it sounds sort of very so consultancy-like, but what you have up there is you have four operating models. The first operating model you have is what we've seen in the last couple of years in blockchains. So as you know, stable coins, dApps and DEXs and you know NFTs and other things. So it's basically things who would not live without a blockchain. Mm-hmm. The second operating model is you know classical industries. And they're saying, you know, they have a supply chain and a part of that supply chain can merge into a blockchain and then it will lower the total cost of ownership, get more interoperability, or there is something with multi-party computation. There is, you know, different things. You know, the world is turning digital at large and we see that very well here in Dubai. So that's that part. Then there is, for the first time, blockchains offers you all the data points. They might not be human readable, but the data points are there. And that means that there's a lot of new business models coming and people, you know, taking that data layer and packaging that and selling that or offering that as a service. So forensic providers, Messari, SAP, those kind of people. And then, of course, we will see a whole new wave of new innovation we cannot really predict at this time. So this is the value capture layer. Mm-hmm. The second layer is the layer which sort of is supposed to bridge the existing world and this new world of dApps and so on with the actual protocol and networking layer. And that layer is very difficult because, you know, it's sort of, it's tooling, it's containers, it's tokenomics and all of that. And particularly here, there's a lot of trust who needs to be embedded and the Cardano Foundation play a large role there. And that's also this connectivity where the regulators and policymakers are very active and very curious about. And then in the bottom, you have sort of the, what we call layer zero or layer one, which is, you know, the actual node, so the public permissionless blockchain, plus the affiliated sidechains, and you have the actual networking stack. And we play a larger role now in the networking stack as we've hired a set of site reliability engineers and built up sort of a team who do real-time network monitoring, health monitoring, and looking at disaster recovery across distributed systems. And the reason why that's important is because if you now already have thousands of companies building up here, you know, if something goes wrong, they're all on the same infrastructure, right? So you need to be sure that you can actually give that trust and that predictability to that infrastructure. And to do that, you need network monitoring and a good network stack.
So actually, you mentioned a really good point when we're talking about building trust. How do you, in other ways, are trying to build trust? In terms of Cardano Foundation, we know that there are like, you have three key focus areas. Can you please dwell upon them? And where, in this case, building trust is embedded in this key area, focus areas?
Yeah, I think in the ancient times, you know, they always said if you could write it down, it's like magic because it stays forever, right? Mm-hmm. So you had the spoken language, you had the written language. And what we're trying to do is through our educational part, we're trying to do two things. Mm-hmm. First, we are trying to basically write down the implementation of Cardano in a human readable format, which we're going to give away to everybody who's interested, to teach people what a third generation blockchain is. And that's actually quite easy if they never had exposure to it before, but it's quite hard if they had some exposure to blockchain, because if you had exposure, you would have learned about Bitcoin and Ethereum, but not necessarily the third generation. The second part of building trust there is really around policymakers, regulators, auditors, and so on. And I think, you know, we cannot just as an industry go out and say, hey, trust the code. If you cannot read the code, we don't care about you, right? I mean, that's really not how it works, because all of our code bases are very complicated. So we built a RegTech tool, an explorer, who basically has a workflow diagram, which is verifiable all the way down to the code. It's built for regulators and policymakers to bring transparency and clarity about how Cardano functions, what are the incentives, how does staking work, what is, you know, slashing, is there slashing, lock-in periods, those really important aspects which is on the regulatory theme. And then the networking, you know, monitoring I spoke to you about before that fits into DORA and other sort of policies themes about operation resilience. Because apart what the regulators also do is if it's a critical infrastructure, they want to have assurance that it doesn't go down and that you have sort of disaster recovery in place, right? So they're very interested in how these new security architecture of the internet, how that actually works and how they can deploy that. So that's sort of the educational angle, which is already a lot.
Yeah.
Then you have the other aspect of that, which is the operational resilience. And that's not just what I spoke about with network monitoring. It is also about the protocol parameter committee, and it's also about incentives. So on one hand, you have when you do hard forks or code changes, you do an update to the actual code stack to enable new features. You know, will it break the blockchain? What does that mean? The other part is we have this opportunity to change the incentives of the Cardano blockchain if the community decides so. What would that actually mean? Do we have a clustering? Do we have a block propagation problem and those things? So I have a team there who really works around ensuring that, you know, whatever we do, we don't break it and we incrementally improve that over time. And they also look at the traditional trust mitigation, which is sort of something called a SOC2 audit, which is something auditors do to sort of verify for the supervisory authorities that this critical infrastructure is not only well documented, but it's also running. And you can't really do that in a distributed fashion as such, but we can use the intent and the mechanisms they're looking for and ploy that down on the Cardano ecosystem. Mm-hmm. So that's these two buckets. And if you get those two right, I think what you will see is that the sort of the four operating models I spoke about before up in this value capture segment, they're really going to be enabled on adoption. And we see that, for instance, when we bootstrapped ICANN, a new smart contracting language on Cardano, we saw a lot of adoption very fast. And we saw also contribution from outside people say, oh, we want to be a part of this project and this is the feature we need. And they started interacting with it, which basically sort of changed the scope and improved our ability to deploy that. So there's a lot of really good things happening about enabling this adoption through digital enablers and growth enablers.
Dubai, home for innovations. So, by the way, when actually, let's say, new audience is coming and is interested in Cardano, what do you believe that, what is the biggest common misconception that people have about Cardano?
Oh, I'm not sure I would know that, to be honest, because we see that people are coming from all trades and all industries and all countries to Cardano at the moment. And everybody sort of have their own little thing. I was in Georgia last week, and I met a very, very senior cotton manufacturer by accident from Uzbekistan. And he basically told me, for over a year I've been overpitched in track and trace, and nobody can actually solve that and make that work. And I showed within 3 minutes a real use case of track and trace where the national ministry is basically doing the digital signatures, including the customs. And he was sort of completely blown away. On the flip side, I was just with the European Securities and Market Authorities, and they were completely sort of taken back on that staking is not staking. So they've been looking mainly at the largest blockchain in the world
They
and
were
sort of.
like analyzing different types of proof of
No, they were
stake.
only analyzing one. They said, oh, staking must be staking. So they looked at Ethereum and said, this must be staking. When I then explained and showed them our RegTech tool, they were
Kind of
like,
rubber.
oh, this is completely different. This is really good. This actually fits in with current regulation and so on.
Which
So,
country?
well, that's the European Union.
Okay,
So
amazing.
they're
What
based out
MiCA
of.
regulations?
So, yeah, this is a derivative of MiCA, right? But MiCA 1 is really mainly around stablecoins and then some sustainability aspects. This year is was the European Securities and Market Authority, so equivalent to the SEC in the US. So they look
Interesting.
at sort of the financial market infrastructure around security offering and issuance and those kind of processes around there. They're based out of Paris, by the way, might work in that context. So I guess what I'm trying to say is that I meet so many different people who have so many different perceptions of Cardano. And what I'm really proud of is that the foundation has deployed so many different tools, explanations, assets, and stuff like that, which basically can help us to scale the explanations and help more people to onboard from whatever sort of line of trade they're coming.
Cardano has a strong focus on decentralized governance, and when we're already talking about your community, they're really dedicated. So, how do you involve the community in decision-making processes, which are related to development and growth of the platform?
Yeah, so we're looking at this, and we of course have a, as you said, a very big scope. We are one of the few platforms who really believe in participatory democracy on chain. A lot of other blockchains say, oh, it has to be off chain, and you will never make it work. But we would like to walk the path and see how much we can make work on the blockchain. So we looked at this from the Cardano Foundation side, and we said, well, we already have a very, very good digital identity solution. We also already have over 3,000 stake pool operators who know how to operate a specific side of tooling. So what we said is we want to enable a vote, a bit as an experiment, where they can go in and actually use this combination of these two tools to cast a public vote on two protocol parameters. One is called K, and the other one is the min pool fee. And what we saw is that if the way we designed it was that on Cardano, it's liquid staking. That means your staking is not locked in. So we said, okay, so the stake pool operator, he votes. It's public voting. That means that everybody can see what is his view. And then there's a 2-week time frame where the ADA holders can say, oh, that's not my opinion. And then they can basically move their stake to somewhere else where their opinion were. And that gave us a lot of data to look at that. And we just changed the min pool fee right now. Based on the outcast of the vote, and we had over 40% of all ADA as participation in this. This is huge if you look at other blockchains and how many people actually participate. So we're
So you
looking.
have active members who are
Yeah,
actively
yeah. And so
in.
what we're doing is we're sort of looking at these incremental moves where we can do something which is meaningful, but we still learn something. Instead of having day X and then you flip the switch and you sit back and pray. So we're really trying to take a little bit of a data-driven approach to it.
Your community, when, for example, you said they're active, they're all the time ready to say, even when they're criticizing something. How do you address when there is some concerns and criticism from the community of Cardano?
Yeah, so Cardano is so big today that you can't really sort of go in one direction without hurting somebody else. So I think what's important is that the Cardano Foundation, we have a 10-year strategy. And every year we do a tactical implementation plan where we basically say this is our intent for the next 5 quarters. And then we basically write an activity report where we basically are looking back and said, what did we actually reach of that? So we're trying to make ourselves accountable towards that. The second part is we're trying to design the KPIs around the Cardano Foundation that as many of those as possible can be measurable over time on the actual blockchain. So one of the things we're sort of looking at is, you know, can you verify as an outcomer whether the Kanata Foundation has made an impact? And this is of course a journey, right? This is not easily done, but that's basically how we look at it. And then we have a large community team who basically are monitoring the channels, and their job is not to say you're right or you're wrong. Their job is to point to facts and to basically interact with the people who have different views. And for instance, here around Voltaire, which is our governance part, we actually wrote up a large report, which is basically summarizing all the actions taken in the last 1.5 years, including sort of terminology and around that. And we also have both sides of the equation. So we try not to leave anybody behind, but we have to be cognizant of, we cannot make everybody happy. We need to get an aligned decision to move forward, to ensure adoption on Cardano and to ensure that social systems around the world gets better over time.
For you as a Cardano Foundation, partnerships are crucial for success. It's actually the success of any blockchain project. So when we're talking about Cardano Foundation, can you please share with us or maybe discuss some upcoming collaborations that perhaps you also announced here at Cardano Summit in Dubai that you are particularly excited about?
So I actually don't think partnerships is crucial to success of a blockchain. I think what's important,
the community, because you're actually, in this case, you're building the community around.
Yeah. And
for enterprise as well, if you're building a lot, let's say, you have amazing, like in this case, great feedback for enterprises.
Yeah.
So you definitely need to have more partners for this and more, I believe so. It actually influences the success of your blockchain, doesn't it?
So the way we think about it, right, is sort of a very legal and very old style way, right? So,
okay.
You know, if you do a partnership agreement, you know, there is some liabilities and some duties among the two parties, right? And you would like to keep people accountable towards that. And we like to do that to explore the art of the possible. So we've done that with United Nations Humanitarian Crisis Organization and so forth. And I think this is a really good way for traditional organizations to work with my technical team and with my partnership team around that. But what we definitely do not want to do is we don't want to just do partnerships, because then we are sort of already competing against our own ecosystem.
Mm-hmm.
And we shouldn't put our ecosystem partnership before our ecosystem. So we already have, you know, use cases from everything from insurance to track and trace to voting to you name it, right? You've been here and seen some of that.
Yeah.
And therefore, I'm sort of reacting a little bit to these partnerships. What I think is important is we enable people to capture value on top of Cardano. And that's not a partnership, because in blockchain, these partnerships is very infrequent. Like I give you some funding and you do X. And if that is that way, then you direct the solution. And we don't know what's best in Kenya. We don't know what's best in America. We don't know what's best in Argentina. We need to enable the builders in Argentina to find a local solution based on a global platform.
Encrypted is your exclusive ticket to the epicenter of technological innovations in the MENA region. By the way, Cardano was really active in Africa, and you got here, like, have you counted how many already users have you gotten from African countries?
I know that we don't count that, because it's actually very hard to count, because we allow people to be anonymous on Cardano. And there's you know, no IP tracking or something like that. However, we do count projects. So we do see a massive spur of fantastic projects, specifically around Ghana, Nigeria, Uganda, Kenya, and Tanzania. For instance, Empower is a fantastic project in West Africa, where they're really looking at agriculture and supply chain and how they basically export some of their goods and pay some attention to the local people living there. So we've seen a lot of traction in Kenya, microfinancing, for instance, in Ethiopia, identity for students and schools. But no, we don't count that. It's very hard to count that without actually, you know, forcing people through an onboarding process and other things.
You also have a strong presence in the Middle East. When we're talking about Dubai in particular and UAE, why for you this region is so interesting? And do you plan as well, perhaps, to make it even like more noticeable in the region?
So I think what's really interesting about this region is that this is the melting pot between Africa, Asia, and Europe.
Mm-hmm.
And specifically with the sort of the new global tensions that happened in the last couple of years, I think Dubai has sort of put their foot forward towards saying, you know, we are a small country, but an important country who can enable trade, who has sort of very clear rules, who has sort of principle-based guidance around these things. And you know, a lot of trade comes through here. And I think this is something which is really interesting for us. And we see a couple of other countries like Singapore, Switzerland, Georgia, and so on, who's also sort of sparking up in this new world era and actually playing a much larger role than you would imagine based on their size or their capital.
Okay, so where will the Cardano Foundation going next?
For the summit?
No, for in terms of business, where are you expanding more?
So we are a nonprofit foundation,
We're
right?
going
So
to the winter, not for the summertime right now.
Yeah, I mean, we refuse to take a country by country approach. We look at
Okay.
use cases, and then we look at what is the chances that these use cases can be, you know, successfully implemented, that they are, you know, verifiable on the blockchain. And then if we have two use cases, we use an external success parameter, which is basically the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals. So we basically say to our partnership team, you know, if you have two use cases who do exactly the same and they're equally graded, then we say if they can tick two or three points on the SDGs, we will always go with the SDGs.
So this for you is like one of the major goals.
Yeah, I mean, the major goals is the adoption on the Cardano blockchain, right? But we also see that many of these new emerging technologies are being weaponized, right? And there is a likelihood that you will get a little bit too much weaponization or asymmetry going on in a project like that, and therefore the Cardano Foundation really looks at something we think about as blockchain for good. Blockchain for good has a double meaning. One is for good, meaning for the good of
For
society, United Nations Sustainable Development Goals, and the other part for good means that this is applications who's going to stay on the blockchain and grow on the blockchain for the years to come. So it's not sort of like a small tulip or something like that, but it's really something who pulls through at scale and changes, you know, the way we do businesses or the way society connects.
So you're actually following like two approaches, for good of people and for good for a long time.
Yes, because that also helps us in terms of being economically sustainable as a blockchain, which is very important when you look at what actually is the foundational level of where we started, with what makes the stateful operators tick and make them actually get up in the middle of the night and check their servers and so on.
Okay, thank you so much. Today we had Frederick Grengard, the CEO of Cardano Foundation. We're moving forward right now to our last part, really quick one, where we would find out more about Frederick. Thank you.
Rapid fire questions.
So right now we're going to our rapid fire questions for our audience to get to know Frederick better. Frederick, you're ready, right?
I am very ready, yeah.
So, Frederick, if you have to explain blockchain to a child, how would you do this in one sentence?
The ability to send your physical play toys over the internet.
Okay, name five qualities that you believe a real entrepreneur should have.
Ownership, innovation, leadership, and the ability to iterate if you do something wrong.
What would you never do while building a company?
I would never be afraid to ask for help.
Bitcoin or Ethereum?
Bitcoin.
Okay, if Cardano were a person, how would you describe it, its personality in one word? If Cardano was a were a person, how would you describe its personality in one word?
Love for humanity.
Oh, amazing. What's your favorite programming language?
Python.
Okay, the proudest moment in your blockchain career? The moment that you were the most proud of?
There's so many moments. I mean, grading that is very hard. I'm extremely proud to be in a bear market and see 1,500 people coming together here in Dubai, not just to talk, not just to do businesses, but to really move the protocol forward and bring, you know, the world on blockchain. So maybe today, actually.
Amazing. The moment you would like to forget.
Oh, there's a lot of moments. There's so many, I cannot even count them.
Okay. Finish the sentence. My business philosophy is?
Extreme ownership.
How often do you practice your keynote before going on a stage?
0.5 times.
Okay. If you could time travel, which era would you visit and why?
I would travel to be fact to before the last great ice age. I'm absolutely certain that there is more about humanity we don't know, and there might have been another civilization at that time. So before the last big ice age.
the most overrated blockchain project in your opinion?
Underrated?
Overrated. And underrated.
Overrated. Most projects who thinks about tokenization.
Okay.
And underrated. I'm really excited about a project here today. Actually, it's called Neum. And I think that's really underrated. People don't really appreciate what they're doing and how far they've come.
If there were a movie about your blockchain life, how would you call it? Let's say blockchain career or about Cardano Foundation. There are many movies right now about crypto. How would you call it?
Suits.
Suits. Okay, there is one, but we will be talking about blockchain this time, yeah? Okay, the next big trend to follow.
So for me, it's definitely how sensors and Internet of Things is coming of maturity and how that's merging with blockchain and how those two things together will create escape velocity for all industries capturing blockchain.
Favorite country you visited for a Cardano-related event?
Georgia.
Amazing. Dubai for you is associated with?
Global trade, culture, and amazing innovation.
Thank you. Thank you. Today we had the CEO of Cardano Foundation, Frederick Grahard. Thank you so much for joining us and see you next time.
From the gleaming skyscrapers of Dubai to the innovation hubs of the Middle East and beyond, Encrypted brings you thought-provoking discussions, exclusive insights, and stories of innovation that will leave you inspired.